The following episode of K-Voice was brought to you March 16th, 2017 at 7:16 p.m. Enjoy the show.
I see little of more importance to the future of our country and our civilization than full recognition of the place of the artist. If art is to nourish the roots of our culture, society must set the artist free to follow his vision wherever it takes him. We must never forget that art is not a form of propaganda. It is a form of truth.
JFK, we have had presidents who value the arts, who value values. The arts and the sciences, essential to the prosperity of the state and to the ornament of human life, have a primary claim to the encouragement of every lover of this country and mankind. George Washington, President Barack Obama. The future belongs to young people with an education and the imagination to create. Bill Clinton, people have the opportunity to build on these skills, enrich their lives, and experience the world from a new perspective. And John Quincy Adams, I must study politics and war, that my son may study mathematics and philosophy in order to give their children the right to study painting, poetry, music, and architecture.
And the nation which disdains the mission of art invites the fate of Robert Frost's hired man, the fate of having nothing to look backward to with pride and nothing to look forward to with hope.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to K, Voice of the Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of the Resistance. I'm Kelly the Voice. Today's hero of the resistance is District Judge Derek Watson of Hawaii, who blocked the Muslim ban 2.0 before it was supposed to go into effect Thursday. A second judge in Maryland has joined Hawaii in its opposition to the Muslim ban. So long as our courts stay intact, we will be able to hold this country together, something that is becoming a concern sooner than I had hoped. The House Judiciary Committee met Thursday morning to discuss the fate of the controversial Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. They discussed proposals to form a new appeals court by splitting off part of the Ninth Circuit, which claims most of the Western U.S. as its jurisdiction, and Republicans have wanted to break up for years. The Ninth Circuit jurisdiction includes roughly one-fifth of Americans relative to the nation's 12 other federal appeals courts. The Ninth Circuit should keep its current jurisdiction despite being a lot bigger than other circuits in terms of geographic size and population. Conservatives mainly want to break it up because they think that it is staffed by too many liberal judges and has issued too many rulings that were eventually overturned by the conservative activist judges in the Supreme Court. HJ Resolution 42, disapproving the rule submitted by Department of Labor relating to drug testing of unemployment compensation applicants. Passed 51-48. States can now waste taxpayer dollars on humiliating those in need of assistance. And then there's this, a new bill which allows employers to genetically test employees and vet their employment based on health has passed committee. How creepy is that? And Republicans, once again, for the third time, refuse to vote to make 45 release his tax return. Dan Coats, former Indiana senator, was confirmed as National Intelligence Director. Coats worked for the high-powered Washington firm of King and Spalding after he was a senator in Indiana. He helped lead the company's government affairs division and lobbied for pharmaceutical, defense, and energy companies. He earned $600,000 in his final 13 months at King and Spalding. So you know, more of the same. But there is good news. Mother Nature took part in the resistance, postponing votes in the House Tuesday and Wednesday, minimizing the damage they could cause. We must give credit where credit is due, though. Robert Reich pointed out that 17 conservative Republican members of Congress, 10 of them in their first or second terms, yesterday announced their support for measures to reverse climate change, using our tradition of American ingenuity, innovation, and exceptionalism. The resolution was spearheaded by Elise Stefanik of New York, Carlos Curbelo of Florida, and Ryan Costello of Pennsylvania. Co-sponsors are all from parts of the country on the front lines of climate change. Southern Florida and South Carolina, both threatened by rising sea levels, and northern Nevada and central Utah, where mountain snowpack has plummeted in recent decades. The resolution follows February's carbon tax and rebate announcement, which was endorsed by three former Republican U.S. Treasury secretaries. Bottom line, you don't have to be a Democrat to understand what is happening to the environment and what must be done. Republicans in districts already affected by climate change are getting the message. It's only a matter of time before the rest of the GOP gets it. Hopefully they'll get it before there's no time left and there's still a planet to save. Our thin-skinned president is not going to be happy with his mail this week. This is from Kate Abby Lambert's article from the HuffPo. On Wednesday, as part of the Ides of Trump campaign, thousands of people plan to send postcards to the president to share messages of concern and frustration and a little bit of mockery. Ted Sullivan, one of the organizers of the snail mail push, told the Huffington Post, "This is about protesting with humor and sarcasm, which are things I don't think Trump can handle very well and get under his skin." Sullivan, a television writer and producer based in Santa Monica, California, came up with the idea with his friend Zach Kushner when they were talking about the witty Trump protest signs they had seen at the Women's March in January. "We're both writers, so we thought it was particularly inspiring," said Kushner. He said, "I wish we could mail them to Trump." Sullivan said, "It came up like, oh, well, you turn them into postcards." In their free time, they made social media accounts and a website calling on others to write postcards to Trump. More than 45,000 people signed up on their site or Facebook page over the last few weeks. Some have shared photos of the postcards they have intended to send. Others have hosted postcard parties where groups got together for marathon writing sessions. Ides of Trump is a play on the Ides of March, a mid-month date that carries some pretty dark symbolism as the anniversary of the assassination of Julius Caesar. Sullivan stressed that his group is against violent acts or messages. "The reference is meant to be snarky," he said, "and poking fun at what seems to be an American Caesar." While it seems doubtful that Trump himself will spend time reading thousands of critical postcards, Sullivan hopes that they'll still make a point. "The message we want him to understand is not on our watch. We are watching. We are not going away. And we're not getting tired," Sullivan said. There's also a pink slip for Trump campaign going on right now. "Before April 15th, tax day, send a pink postcard, letter, or envelope to our president telling him that he is fired." Kids have engaged in their own postcard writing campaigns as well.
"Dear Mr. President."
"Dear Mr. President."
"Dear Mr. Trump."
"Congratulations on winning the election.
In the face of political elitism, you provided a much-needed change of pace.
I am hopeful for the economy and the creation of jobs that you will create.
I think that on the inside you are a good man. That's not what my friends think."
"You have banned an entire group of people from coming into the United States, but now who will build this country up from the rubble you will put it under?
Not letting immigrants into America is really not nice, so please let them in."
"Just because I'm Mexican doesn't mean you can't build a wall in my country."
"Please don't build the wall, and don't let people have guns."
"I am happy for you, but while you are president, please make the world a better place."
"We are looking to you to serve us."
"Please, Mr. Trump,
make America great again."
"Have a good time being president. Sincerely, Ida."
"Sincerely, Robert Peterson."
"Sincerely, Mimi."
"P.S. Please don't build a wall around Mexico. P.P.S. Please, please don't stop the refugees from coming."
Contact your senator. Tell them to call for postponing the hearings of the Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch until there's been a complete independent investigation of the Trump-Russian scandal. David S. Cohen of Rolling Stone reminds us that amidst the chaos of our current politics, Gorsuch has fallen by the wayside in discourse and media, but also because the Democrats have failed to keep him in the front. It has been more important to talk about Trump's fantastical tweets for a full week and a half instead of the fact that Gorsuch has sailed through early parts of the nomination process, meeting with some more than 70 senators and getting very little pushback. That could start to change Monday when Gorsuch's confirmation hearings begin. What happens next week will provide much information about whether Gorsuch will actually become a justice. Every Supreme Court nominee has to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee before being considered by the entire Senate. These televised hearings will last a few days, and then the committee will vote. There are currently 11 Republicans and 9 Democrats on the committee, so there is no doubt that Gorsuch will be approved. What we don't know is, one, whether Democrats will ask him challenging questions, and two, whether they'll let him get away with not answering them. So far, the Democrats have not given much of an inclination that they'll do this. Some Democratic senators, such as Oregon's Jeff Merkley, have spoken out forcefully against him, but most have not. Democratic senator and leader Chuck Schumer has waffled and now gone quiet about the issue. Next week isn't the only chance the Democrats have to stand up to Gorsuch. They can still filibuster his nomination when it comes time before the full Senate, but the hearings are the most visible forum they'll have for doing so. It is hard to imagine Gorsuch coming off as anything but a respectable, smart, and nice guy. But the Democrats can, if they want to, also make him look like the radical extremist that he is. The incredible people behind the Indivisible Guide of Resistance has put out a 5-step PDF on what to do if your representative is not having town halls. They seem to have time to meet the media, legislatures, lobbyists, podcasters, you name it. But they, by and large, are not meeting with the people, their constituents, whom they were elected to serve. Let's be clear, that's their job. One of the reasons they get such long recesses is to come home and meet the people that they are supposed to be legislating. Believe it or not, these recesses are called district work periods. I have posted a link to the guide on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance. Like my page and share it. The page also will help keep you abreast of other resources that I come across as I come across them. Okay, I've wanted to play this for you for some time. It's George Orwell's final warning.
1984 is, I believe, a quite terrifying masterpiece. So terrifying, in fact, I don't think I should like to read another like it.
I am not absolutely dissatisfied with it. I think it is a good idea, but the execution would have been better if I had not been under the influence of TB when I wrote it.
You once claimed that you have an ability to face unpleasant facts. Is that what you've demonstrated in 1984 by drawing an accurate portrait of the future?
I think that allowing for the book being, after all, a parody, something like 1984 could actually happen. This is the direction the world is going in at the present time. In our world, there will be no emotions except fear, rage, triumph, and self-abasement. The sex instinct will be eradicated. We shall abolish the orgasm. There will be no loyalty except loyalty to the party. But always there will be the intoxication of power. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. The moral to be drawn from this dangerous nightmare situation is a simple one. Don't let it happen. It depends on you.
The National Endowment for the Arts. Without the National Endowment of the Arts, we would not have...
Rubber Ducky, you're the one...
Sesame Street, of course. But we would also not have The Color Purple. Independent films like Reservoir Dogs. We wouldn't have The King Tut Exhibit. Great directors like Darren Aronofsky and Terrence Malick. Broadway hits like Rent. John Kennedy Toole's tragic novel, The Confederacy of Dunces. Or big digs such as the 1994 rediscovery of the site of Jamestown and the 2016 discovery of the original Plymouth, Massachusetts settlement. The 1990s archaeological archaeological exploration of Troy and the 1995 exhumation of the mummified Ice Maiden. I could go on. The Republicans and the Trump administration plan to defund the National Endowment for the Arts. Drew Gilpin Faust says, in 1990, Rick Burns and his brother Ken produced an 11.5-hour documentary on the Civil War that was broadcast over 5 consecutive nights, was seen by more than 40 million viewers. For much of the nation, it was an early form of binge-watching. Made by the Humanities Endowment, like its sibling, the National Endowment of the Arts, the endowment brings the humanities into parts of the country that might otherwise never get to see a world-class museum exhibition, or hear a lecture by Pulitzer Prize winner, or last year, the endowment marked the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death by sponsoring a 50-state tour of his first folio, published in 1623, the first collected edition of 36 of his plays. It was a bestseller of its own time, and his 2016 travels provided by the occasion for the performances, workshops, lectures, and student field trips in places as different as Vermilion, South Dakota, and Manhattan, and Canada, and Juneau, Alaska. The endowment has funded projects that have made some 8 million pages of rare, crumbling historic newspapers available to anyone with a computer. It sponsors seminars that enable 2,500 high school and college teachers each summer to enrich their curriculum on topics ranging from Appalachian culture to Muslim identities to the poetry of Emily Dickinson. It has given resources for nearly 4 decades, which has directly engaged more than 8 million middle and high school students with records of the past. It has supported the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, a repository of information from nearly 36,000 slave voyages across the Atlantic. It sponsors the collection, editing, and publication of the papers of important historic figures like George Washington and Lewis and Clark. And it supports the Warrior Scholars Project, which organizes humanities boot camps to help prepare veterans for the transition from military to college. The following is by Drew Gilpin Faust for the New York Times. The endowment helps Americans explore and better understand how we came to be a nation, a people, the world we are. It challenges us to reflect on our identities as citizens, as human beings, and ask profound questions about origins, legacies, and meaning, to contemplate where we are going as individuals, as a society, and why. It links the past to our future, and it connects all of us to purposes that guide us. The work of the endowment nurtures our nation and it nurtures our soul. We must ensure that it continues. Music. Music improves visual and verbal skills. It keeps an aging brain healthy, makes you happier. Heartbeat, pulse rate, and blood pressure improves sleep quality, boosts your immune system, and reduces pain. Music reduces depression and anxiety. And here are some of the reasons why children thrive when they make art. Art promotes creativity. Art encourages neural connections. Art builds fine motor skills. Scribbling is a precursor to writing. Art develops problem-solving abilities. Art helps kids understand themselves and the world, and art helps kids connect. Not just kids, people too. Make no mistake, this is a tragedy on a different level, and it's coming at us from all sides, and I realize that. But this is important too. So the new Republican budget proposed many cuts, which huge boost to our military. Meanwhile, it cut, and these are just a few, 21st Century Community Learning Centers, which provide funding for after-school programs for students in high poverty areas. Advanced Technology Vehicles Manufacturing Program provides loans to automotive manufacturing developing fuel-efficient technologies. African Developmental Foundation invest in African-American businesses. Appalachian Regional Commission invest in projects for economic growth in the Appalachian region. ARPAE funds research into new energy technologies. Capacity Building for Community Development and Affordable Housing provides housing assistance to low-income families. Chemical Safety Board investigates industrial chemical accidents. This is in alphabetical order, and I'm disgusted. Luckily, I'm not the only one. Organizations that work closely with artists and the arts have come out against the budget. The DGA-WGA, SAG-AFTRA, released a joint statement condemning the budget, saying cutting federal support of these programs will not only hurt artists and those who will benefit from their work, but it'll also send damaging message to future generations about the power of art and its place in our future. Similarly, Neil Porto, president and CEO of the Recording Academy, says the White House proposal to eliminate funding for the National Endowment of the Arts is short-sighted and alarming. The modest support that we provide to music and the arts is returned many times over, whether measured in jobs and economic impact or sheer cultural enrichment and introspection. A fight in Congress is certainly in store, as many of these agencies and organizations have indicated that they will be taking their case to the Senate and the House of Representatives to make their case for their very existence. Earlier today, the House Committee on Appropriations Chairman Rodney Fringlehian, forgive me, I can't say his last name. He's from New Jersey, Republican from New Jersey. And he said, this committee will take a closer look at the budget and supplemental request we received today. As director under the Constitution, Congress has the power of the purse. While the president may offer proposals, Congress must review both requests and assure the wise investment of the tax dollars. Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, issued his own statement that the budget eliminated the very programs that make our nation more secure. He called it a divorce from reality and packed with partisan campaign promises. Mick Mulvaney showed zero compassion in his press conference. We are cutting after-school programs. He says that Meals on Wheels and after-school programs such as Head Start need to show demonstrable effects. Effects? What effects are you looking for? Meals on Wheels delivers meals to people who, you know, need meals. What positive effects do the arts and food and books and compassion have on the country? All the difference in the world. My mom had a troubled home life growing up. She would retreat to a public library and into the fantasy of books as a child. She had a safe place to go to and to learn and to set herself on the right path to thrive and get good grades and invest in her independence and into college against all odds. Without the library, where would she be? Where would she have retreated? The streets? To others thriving on the streets? Instead, disappearing into books, she could have disappeared into drugs or who knows what else. Where would she be? Where would I be? Think of it this way. Without a positive place to give her direction, she could have easily dropped out of school, been in and out of work, become a dependent on the system, had kids who too had to have help from the system, who then had kids. Think of all that money. Instead, she grew up, went to school, bought a house, had two kids, gave them a great life, and her kids grew up to do well and contribute to society and so on. There's your effects. There's your demonstrable effects, Mulvaney. There's your proof. And I'm sure if we sat down, we could work all that out in dollars. If that's what you want, numbers. These results can be quantified. My sister-in-law is a librarian, and she sent me this from Shonda Hines, the press officer for the American Library Association. America's more than 120,000 public, school, private, and college, university, and many other libraries aren't piles of archived books. They're trusted centers for technology, job counseling, retraining, veteran services, entrepreneurship, education, teaching and learning, and free inquiry at the core of communities in every state of the country, and in every congressional district. And they're staffed by the original search engine, skilled and engaged librarians. IMLS, the Institute of Museum and Library Services, is the primary source of federal support for the nation's 123,000 libraries and 35,000 museums. Cutting this funding means that countless libraries will lose access to the grants that allow them to replace crumbling technology and infrastructure that many rural and urban communities depend on. Libraries often provide the only broadband access to rural communities, and many Americans in all areas often rely on libraries to apply to jobs, access training, and learn new skills, and many entrepreneurs use the resources found in the library to get a competitive edge in an increasingly global marketplace. In fact, for every dollar spent on libraries, more than $5 are returned to the community, according to the Library Journal. This proposal will now be debated and fought over in the Senate. We need all hands on deck. We must be heard. Make it painful for our senators to pass such a heartless and ignorant budget. Make sure they defund art, the environment, and history at their own peril. We cannot stop the tide, but we can slow it.
Make it a priority to promote the arts and the humanities, especially for our young people. And it's because we believe that the arts and the humanities are, in many ways, reflective of our national soul. They're central to who we are as Americans, dreamers and storytellers and innovators and visionaries. They're what helps us make sense of the past, the good and the bad. They're how we chart a course for the future while leaving something of ourselves for the next generation to learn from.
Now, more than ever, we need to stand for the arts. It is no longer simply an act of passion to create art. It is an act of resistance. Make, create, teach, and share your art like it is the soul of the nation that depends on it. Write a play, volunteer, tutor, teach, direct, organize a festival of art. We must give the kids what they will lose. We must step up in the absence of government and donate, donate, donate. I find, for me, the best way is to set up low monthly donations to an organization or several. The money just comes out every month. And take to the streets, protest, be heard. Again, the rollback of our regulations, which are our protections, and the defunding of the arts, we must make it clear that they do this despite the people, not for the people. We will be the humanity they lack, and we have no choice but to fight for those who can't, for those who will be hurt most by the government, children, the elderly, and the sick. Never have we been more important, so our vitality and passion must remain strong. I'm fired up, and I know others are too. Local matters more than ever now. We must write, call, and show up for our local legislatures to impress on them the importance of filling in where the federal government abandons us. Our states can fund arts programs and so on, but they need to know that the people want it, that the people are desperate for it. If you would like to help libraries, or where else you can, one resource is at action.everylibrary.org for more information. Remember, this is not forever. In 2 years, we'll retake the Senate. In 4, the House and the presidency. We'll be able to turn all this stuff around. We are the majority. And I believe, I have to believe, that the good will out. This country has been worse off, very worse off. And still progress was made for the better, for change. And things got better. We got better. We are in the middle of a giant setback right now. But perhaps we can come out of it not simply with an equal and opposite reaction, but a great reaction. We will fling open the doors, reopen the libraries, double, triple our arts and humanities spending. We will take a moonshot for climate change that will make us world leaders in environmental protections. We will have universal health care because America will witness and feel the pain of loss of all we took for granted. A loss that will activate her citizens to give a damn. We are strong. We are many, and we have history on our side. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my show on crabdiving.com, iTunes, Stitcher. Catch the Crab Diving Show if you're looking for a funny way to get your news 5 days a week from 2 to 4. Keep listening, sharing, and resisting. Like my Facebook page at K Voice of Resistance or follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice. Go make some art. And as always, resist.
I look forward to a great future for America. A future in which our country will match its military strength with our moral restraint, its wealth with our wisdom, its power with our purpose. I look forward to an America which will not be afraid of grace and beauty, which will protect the beauty of our natural environment, which will preserve the great old American houses and squares and parks of our national past, and which will build handsome and balanced cities for our future. I look forward to an America which will reward achievement in the arts as we reward achievement in business or statecraft. I look forward to an America which will steadily raise the standards of artistic accomplishment and which will steadily enlarge cultural opportunities for all of our citizens. And I look forward to an America which commands respect throughout the world, not only for its strength, but for its civilization as well. And I look forward to a world which will be safe, not only for democracy and diversity, but also for personal distinction. For Robert Frost was often skeptical about projects.